Hi, I'm Terry Griffith. I'm here with my co-host, Steve Bogetti, and we're Bark Radio.
Hey, Bark Radio listeners. We've got a big holiday coming up here shortly in the United States, Memorial Day. So, Terry, what can you tell our listeners about Memorial Day?
Well, it's Monday.
At this point, I smack my co-host. Flap! A little more, Terry.
Oh, besides Monday.
Yes.
Well, it's a day when we remember the folks who have pretty much given their all for our country and our freedom. Remember our soldiers.
It's for our soldiers and our sailors and our airmen, our Coast Guard. We'll start with that part, and it is a very serious part, folks. Please don't think we take any of it lightly. We love our military folks, and we want to thank them all for doing what they do to keep us safe, keep us free. We may detest our politicians, but we love our soldiers and sailors and airmen. Yeah. So, in honor of Bark Radio, Memorial Day, soldiers. We got to talk about
dogs.
Woohoo! Military working dogs. How cool a subject is that? These guys are four-legged heroes, man.
That's a big span of time there, though.
It's huge, and we can't go back to the beginning. I mean, you found a reference how long ago?
683 BC, but now these were fighting dogs versus sort of the more modern day.
But they were fighting military dogs.
Military dogs, platoons of dogs.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so, no, we won't go back exactly that far, because, man, I'm not even sure how much there's written about that. But
probably images.
Yeah. But we will go back, I think, to World War One. I think that's an era that we're not quite as familiar with military working dogs.
Yeah, I think more people are familiar with World War II and Vietnam and, and current dogs with Afghanistan and Iraq. But World War I's got some interesting stuff in it. I mean, stuff that you just don't hear that much about anymore.
It's true. And let's just start with one really just little interesting piece here, a place that I had not heard about. And when Terry looked it up on the internet, his first response was, we could go there, and I think we should at some point. It's called the Hartsdale Pet Cemetery, and it's in New York. And they have a war dog memorial there.
Cool.
And it's beautiful, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, the picture's amazing. I mean, that's
a phenomenal
setup.
Oh, my gosh. It is so cool. And it was put up in it's dedicated to the memory of the war dog. Erected by public contribution by dog lovers to man's most faithful friend for the valiant services rendered in the World War, 1914 to 1918. And I just think that's amazing. It was erected in 1923, and it was attended, when they unveiled it, it was attended by representatives of every nation that fought in what they always refer to as the Great War. That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, that's powerful.
It is very powerful, and it's a powerful sculpture.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
It is.
So if you're ever in Hartsdale, New York, give it a visit. We will put a link up on our website, as always.
You at least check out the pictures. Very cool.
Oh, very cool pictures. Then we move on to, some of the stuff that the dogs did in World War One. Maybe a little different to what they do now because of the nature of the war.
Right, trench warfare.
There were a lot of Red Cross dogs, that's what they called them, and it's a version, it seems to me as I read through this, of modern search dogs, search and rescue dogs. Understand that at that time there was not a lot of knowledge about scent theory, about how dogs smelled what they smell, but somehow the folks in the military at that point figured out that dogs could be very helpful in using their sense of smell. One of the things that astounds me is they taught the dogs to recognize, well, whether a soldier on the battlefield was alive or dead. And they were trained to ignore the dead soldiers. They couldn't do anything for them. But if the soldier was wounded, the dog might have had a saddlebag on that had medical supplies in it. So if the individual was conscious or if there was someone with him but without medical supplies, they would have them because the dog brought them. But the other thing that the dog would do, the dog was trained to retrieve something that soldier was wearing, like his hat or his helmet, and the dog would return to his handler at base with that and then take his handler to the wounded soldier.
That's cool. Can't imagine that dog carrying a helmet. Those are heavy.
Yeah. But there's a picture of one.
I saw
yeah,
it. It's like, dang.
Holy mackerel. It just blows my mind. Well, then they started getting more inventive as they realized, for one thing, there wasn't always something for the dog to bring back.
Mm-hmm.
And so they taught the dogs an alert. They taught the dogs to come back and go to their handler and down, go into a down if they found someone that they needed to take their handler to.
Nice.
You know, and that's just so similar to search and rescue. One of the cool things that the Germans did was they came up with, it's the first reference I've ever seen historically, of using a Bringsel. B-R-I-N-S-E-L is the way they spelled it. And what they did was they taught their dogs, when they went out, found a live soldier, this Bringsel was a really short leash. And if they found a soldier who was wounded and needed aid, the dog would come back with that short leash in his mouth. If he came back and it was just hanging, then he'd not found a wounded soldier.
Hmm.
Very cool
very
stuff.
Amazing.
And I know a young woman, a young lady here in Virginia who's in Wilderness Search and Rescue, and she uses a version of that Bringsel on her dog when that dog searches for people missing here in the state. So, you know, that was World War One, and we're still using some of the
kinds. It's a sound methodology. I mean, it just...
It's so flippin' amazing.
Yeah.
So, let's see. The kinds of jobs they had other than finding wounded soldiers. One of the things that they did was they could be used as draft animals. This would be, like they said, 80 pounds and over. Paul, our friend with the Newfoundlands, his dogs would have been perfect for this because they could pull a wagon with a wounded soldier on it.
Right.
Back to base and back to medical aid. They were used as couriers. Most mm-hmm. of us remember seeing that somewhere in the movies.
Right.
So those great World War One working dogs had a lot of jobs, including sentry and patrol work. One of the things that I read in a book about these dogs was, you know, you don't train a working dog to do everything that he instinctively knows how to do.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I read was if these dogs happened to come upon a soldier who was dying, they would lie down next to the soldier. And so if he was conscious, at least he had the company of a dog as he passed away.
Yeah.
And that's pretty phenomenal just in and of itself, man.
Yeah.
You know, all that war raging around them, and these dogs were able to do that. Another thing that I read with interest, because I've done some training at night with search and rescue dogs,
mm-hmm.
was that they did use the dogs a lot at night because they were invisible and they just used their noses.
Yeah.
And so they were just an incredible part of the war effort and have been in every war since. And so, you know, our hats are off to them. These are great dogs. And now Terry's going to tell us about a very famous World War One working dog.
Probably the most famous. And if you're listening and you're into the bully breeds, you've probably heard of Sergeant Stubby before. He was a heavily decorated war veteran from World War One. He was actually a stray dog found on Yale's campus by a man named Robert Conroy, who was in the military. And he kind of adopted him. And
uh-huh.
so when they were training, Sergeant Stubby would walk along with them and march with them. And they even taught him to salute.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
A sergeant who's a pit bull. Woohoo!
Well, if you look at the picture, it's hard to tell. He's a bully breed, but he looks like a hodgepodge.
He does. Look at that face, man. First, he's got the cutest face in the world, I swear. And he's sort of got the look of a sergeant.
He
don't
does.
You think?
He does. Oh. Yeah, he's got that little grumpy look on
yeah.
his face.
So go on.
Well, when Conroy shipped out, he smuggled Sergeant Stubby on board the ship with him, and they went to France.
Wow.
So he did 18 months of tour duty over there with Conroy.
That's a long time.
Yeah, he was in 4 offensives, 17 battles. He saved, or he warned of incoming gas bombs, incoming artillery. He actually saved one of the villager girls from being run over by a car.
Wow. What a guy.
It's pretty neat. The villagers over there thought so much of him, they made him a jacket, and he has had a jacket with all his medals on it, because
oh,
he'd done that
cool
much.
Oh, cool is that, man.
Phenomenal stuff. I mean, neat little dog. He was an icon of that era.
Right.
And then they smuggled him back home.
Did they really? That's so cool. Yeah, you go, Stubby.
That's right. So there's some neat pictures out there on the internet. We'll post some links to it. But Stubby, I mean, there's a lot of history with him. That's just sort of a summary, but amazing. I mean, and this dog was just a stray.
And, you know, we talk about on Bark Radio a lot, you know, these dogs, we call them rescues, you know, but dogs who had street lives or no lives or cruel lives, and they're rehomed, and sometimes they're rejobbed, and dogs are just a miracle on four legs. They blow my mind, and he's a perfect example of one. And although we've been talking about World War One for the most part, I ran across another hero. He happened to be from World War Two, and he's just cute as a bug's ear too. His name was Chips. Okay, so Chips became well known for one particular incident. He and his handler were going up the beach in Sicily, and they came under fire from a disguised pillbox. When that happened, the dog broke free from his handler and went right into the pillbox. And I love this. This is a quote from the website. "Moments later, several bitten and surrendering Italian soldiers emerged, all shepherded by a very determined dog."
Nice.
How cool is that? Now, even though Chips was wounded in that incident, he returned to duty that night, and he alerted his troops to an approaching group of Italians. This allowed his handler and squad time to capture all of them. So he was a real honest-to-God hero. He was, in fact, such a hero that he was awarded a Silver Star for Valor and a Purple Heart. And then they were taken away.
Yeah, that's crap.
And this makes me crazy because of one very specific thing with the government. Here's the quote. "Chips was a true hero, but his Silver Star and Purple Heart were taken away because he was categorized as equipment by the military." Oh, police!
Yep.
They're living, breathing soldiers, and that's just crap, and it makes me crazy. And wouldn't it be great if someday there was someone high enough in power who would flip that and give him back his medals?
They've been trying. So there's a number of people that are within the military, within the government, who are trying to do that. There's some old, staunchy, backwards people that just don't budge. But in the last 3 or 4 years, I've read several attempts. So it's coming.
Good.
But even today, there's still equipment.
That's just amazing to me because, you know, they're given rank. Like they're human handlers.
I know.
You know? And and
you don't have Sergeant Jeep.
Yeah, really. Hello.
Sergeant Tank.
Before we sign off here, I do want to say this too. We've talked about dogs from wars that happened quite some time ago. But to all you dog handlers out there who are currently in the military and have canine partners, thank you for what you do. Your dogs to us are heroes, and we love you guys. And just, you know, be safe, take care of you, take care of your dogs, and we hope to see you back here in the States someday.
Yep. Have a good Memorial Weekend, folks. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.